If you suffer from chronic pain, you're not alone. Chronic pain affects 116 million Americans, more than those affected by diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined. Worldwide, more than 1.5 billion people suffer from chronic pain. Back pain is the leading cause of disability in Americans younger than 45. Chronic pain is also the leading cause of disability worldwide. The suffering can be intense. Suicidal risk is at least doubled in chronic pain patients. Individuals with chronic pain die significantly earlier from all causes than those without chronic pain. Our guest today, talking about chronic pain, is Cindy Perlin. Cindy is a licensed clinical social worker, certified biofeedback practitioner, and a chronic pain survivor herself. She's written a book called The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments, The Best and Worst Strategies for Becoming Pain-Free. And she's the creator of the Alternative Pain Treatment Directory, which can be found online at www.paintreatmentdirectory.com. She's in the private practice of pain management in the New York area, where she has been helping her clients achieve health and wellness goals for over 25 years. Cindy, it's nice to have you on the show today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, we hear about pain as it relates to pharmacological treatment every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 175 people die a day from opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. And here in North Carolina, where I live, it's very bad also. So we're going to talk a little bit about the underlying treatments of chronic pain so that our listeners today can get an idea of what's good and what's not so good.
Okay.
So sure. You got a great book here. I have read it, and it was endorsed by a couple friends of mine, Dr. Larry Dawsey and Dr. Bernie Siegel, and they give you high praise for this book. So I think that you did a really good job. It's well-researched, well-written, and covers the waterfront with respect to pain management and what you might be able to do to help with your pain problem. I remember reading in your book that pain is not a result of a pharmacological deficiency. We're not low on some drug.
Right.
You know. So, get me started by why. Why did you research this book? Why did you do it?
Well, two reasons. One is that I'm a chronic pain survivor myself. And I spent years and years suffering, going to doctors who couldn't help me, and not finding anything within conventional medicine, and having to stumble around until I found some things that did work that the doctors didn't tell me about. And it troubled me that there wasn't an easier way to find out about options. And that was one reason that I wrote the book. And the other reason is that so many people are dying from their pain treatment these days. The opioids are really just the tip of the iceberg because, you know, the opioid crisis started with overprescribing of opioids for chronic pain and acute pain. And there's other ways that people die from pharmaceutical treatments, including opioids. Opioids reduce your immune response, so you're more likely to die of infections, more likely to die of cancer. 21% of fatal automobile accidents are due to opioids. And other drugs are really, you know, dangerous also. For instance, about a year and a half ago, the FDA came out with their strongest warning possible before they take something off the market about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen and Celebrex, that they significantly raise your risk of heart disease and heart attack and stroke. So that can be deadly. Aspirin can be deadly. Tylenol can be deadly. There's so many things that are pharmaceuticals that can make your problem worse. When I had back pain that was disabling, I was given a drug that when I looked it up said that it could give you leukemia in as little as 2 weeks of use. And I was outraged my doctor would give me something that could kill me when what I had was pain.
Cindy, most of the people with chronic pain, their first stop is their doctor's office.
Right.
But physicians, to a large extent, are not well trained on pain management, chronic pain, what to do about it. Why is that?
Well, because in medical school, only an average of 2 hours is devoted to anything related to pain, including diagnosis and treatment of any kind. So they're very ill-prepared for the fact that 40% of patients who present to doctor's offices are coming because they're having pain. And doctors are mainly educated in pain management by the pharmaceutical reps, who come in and say, we've got this great new drug, and, you know, it'll help your patients with pain. So that's where they get their education. And if you even look at the journals that physicians read and the conferences that they attend, it's highly pharmaceutical-based. So doctors really don't know that much about pain and how to treat it and even how to diagnose it.
I think that these narcotic pain pills probably are the number one most prescribed drugs in the country these days. What do you think?
You know, it's either that or the antidepressants. You know, they're both overprescribed and both prescribed in huge, huge numbers to a very large percentage of the population. There's enough opioids prescribed to give every adult American a month's supply every year.
Well, in just the numbers of people who are taking these drugs, you can see how many billions and billions and billions of dollars are going into some drug companies' pockets. And
right. And, you know, what happened is that in 1996, Purdue Pharma came out and said they had this great new extended-release opioid, and patients couldn't get addicted to it, and doctors could prescribe it as liberally as possible, and it was, relatively speaking, inexpensive. So the whole medical system shifted towards prescribing opioids and away from any kind of alternatives that were actually safer. So a lot of programs that were working well for pain management were reduced, and everybody started prescribing opioids. The availability of physical therapy, the restrictions by insurance companies on the number of sessions you could have, decreased the availability of psychotherapy, which is a useful treatment for chronic pain. That decreased. Chiropractic access to that decreased. There were multidisciplinary pain clinics, over 1,000 of them around the country, where people from a variety of specialties, physical therapists, psychotherapists, doctors, biofeedback therapists, would all come together in one program and evaluate a patient, figure out what they needed, taper them off their meds while they were building people up and teaching them pain management skills. That was the most successful approach we'd ever had, and insurance companies stopped reimbursing them, so We went from over 1,000 of those programs in the United States to less than 50 today.
You've listed in your book some common causes of pain: muscle weakness, diaphragm spasm, inflammation, chronic tension, nutritional deficiencies, food sensitivities, toxins. But there's one in there that I treat that's very important as far as what I do, which is addiction. And pain, chronic pain, is one of the symptoms of addiction. And the funny thing about it is, that having been said, is that you can get addicted to pain medicines at the same time, so you can have the symptom and you can have the problem coming from a different source. But what do you see as the connection between pain and addiction?
Well, I think there are common root causes in terms of if people have had a lot of emotional trauma in their lives, particularly early childhood trauma, that predisposes people to both emotional and physical pain. So addiction can come from emotional pain, and it can also come from the treatment that's being offered for your physical pain being an addictive one.
Well, most people are addicted to something.
That's true.
And in your media kit, you said if someone has a history of an addiction, which means most of us, is it safe to take opioids for pain management? What do you think?
Well, you know, when I was talking about a history of addiction, I really meant to drugs, particularly to opioid drugs, not so much a food addiction or a codependency addiction or something like that. I was really talking about if someone has an opioid addiction. And in fact, most people in chronic pain who overdose are subsequently given prescriptions for opioids, which is just outrageous because, you know, they've already overdosed. They've already shown a tendency to lack of control or over-reliance on opioids to the point where it's life-threatening. So to give someone in that situation, no matter how you say you're doing it, you know, because there's all of this policy stuff going on right now that says, well, if you monitor the people, if you control their doses, if you don't give them, you know, a lot of pills at once, you can control it. That doesn't work when people can go out on the street and buy opioids, whether they're illicit prescription opioids or whether they're heroin or fentanyl. When people are exposed again, they get re-addicted, even if they've overcome their addiction. And, you know, it can easily escalate to a deadly level. Part of the problem, I think one of the most common times to overdose is when someone has been in addiction treatment and they've been abstinent for a period of time. And then they go out and they do the usual dose and their body has adjusted to the absence of the opioids. They no longer have as great a tolerance, and that's often when they die.
Yes.
So, now, a very famous example of that is Seymour Philip Hoffman. Philip Seymour Hoffman,
the actor who played
Truman Capote, and he had 22 years of sobriety after recovering from a heroin addiction, and then he developed a pain problem, and he was given opioids, and he ended up realizing he had a problem, going into treatment again for opioid addiction, but then being found dead shortly after with a needle in his arm.
Right. It seems that the gateway to heroin addiction is often legal prescriptions for pain using opioids. Tell our people why someone gets on heroin when they've had a little run with opioids.
Well, because when you start using opioids, your body adjusts to them. That's a phenomenon called tolerance. So you need more and more to maintain the same effect, to get the same amount of pain relief. And then, you know, what happens is that sometimes you can't get any more. You know, sometimes the doctor says, well, I'm giving you as much as I could give you. You know, you apparently have a problem with it. And then, you know, people start going through withdrawal, which is pretty horrible. So they turn to the street. Somebody local to my area wrote an interesting book about his own experience, which he called From Federal Prosecutor to Federal Prisoner. And he was a guy who, he was in the Marines, and I think he got his law degree while he was in the Marines. He got hurt during basic training. He hurt his back. And he was down south somewhere, and they gave him opioids for pain management for his back. And he, you know, he was doing okay with that for a while, but he developed tolerance. He kept using more and more, needing more and more prescription drugs to manage his pain. And then he got a promotion up north, and when he got to the Albany area, he couldn't get any doctors to prescribe the amounts that he was getting down south. And he ended up, the withdrawals were so bad, he ended up robbing banks to get money to pay for his drugs. And he robbed four or five banks before he got caught and ended up in federal prison.
Wow.
Most people don't go that far, but what they're doing to people with pain now is they're cutting back their opioids, sometimes very abruptly. People have developed tolerance. People have been using them for decades. You know, people who maybe haven't been abusing them, haven't been using more than their prescription, but they've needed more and more over time because of tolerance. And then because of the CDC guidelines that came out going on almost 2 years ago, a lot of doctors are cutting them off or cutting them down really abruptly, and they're going into withdrawal. And, you know, the stories that I'm hearing is that some people are committing suicide, some people are going from being functional and able to work to being totally disabled and totally miserable. Other people are hitting the streets, apparently, because the rate of overdoses from heroin and fentanyl are going up as the access to prescription drugs is going down. And I don't think the solution is to keep everybody on their high doses of prescription opioids indefinitely, because it's really not a good approach to pain management.
Right.
Over time, people who use opioids actually have more pain than people with similar medical conditions who've never used them. And now they're finding that it alters your body in such a way that you actually have more pain taking opioids than if you didn't take them. They've actually found the underlying mechanisms for that. So I think the solution is to allow people other options. You know, just like the interdisciplinary pain clinics did many years ago, taper them off slowly while giving them more control, more skills, more options.
Cindy, there's people listening today who are addicted to prescription opioids, no doubt. What would you say to them, from your perspective, that they should do?
Well, I think that the very best thing that they could do is sign a treatment program that treats both chronic pain and addiction. And there probably aren't a lot of those out there. And access to any kind of treatment is very difficult. So I know of two things that help greatly with drug withdrawal and chronic pain. One of them is medical marijuana. Medical marijuana is very effective with chronic pain, plus it helps people with withdrawal. So there's only 29 out of the 50 states and the District of Columbia who have legal medical marijuana. So access to that is a problem for people, and the cost is a problem too, because it's not covered by insurance. There's something else that seems to work as well for both, for many people, and that's a Southeast Asian herb called kratom. It's K-R-A-T-O-M. And just like marijuana, there's different strains. Some are more calming, some are more stimulating. People have to experiment with it a little bit, but it helps ease withdrawal as well as helping with pain. And so people can take it for both and slowly taper their prescription drugs. And many people who don't have addiction problems but are on opioids, I have a Facebook page for my book, which I invite people to join. I have over 38,000 followers. It's the same as the name of my book, The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments. And I hear from many, many people who comment on my posts that they have used kratom and marijuana to get off their opioids. And not only are they, you know, now managing their pain better, just overall they feel better. The, you know, the sedating properties of opioids that decrease their motivation and with depressing them and all of that, they now just feel happier, they're more productive. They can often get rid of other medications for sleep and for anxiety and for depression using either kratom or medical marijuana. I've heard from people who are on 11 different medications and were able to replace them with one herb. Ironically, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the DEA, and the FDA are now trying to ban kratom, trying to say that there have been fatalities. They can point to 36 people who died while kratom was in their system, but all of those people had all kinds of other drugs in their system that could have caused the fatality. So they're trying to ban it, and of course, medical marijuana, it's been quite a struggle for people to get access to that. So it's really a problem that people don't have access to alternatives.
Well, if you've been taking prescription opioids for pain for a while, and you probably built up a tolerance, and you're probably on higher doses, you're going to have a problem when you detoxify. It's a very rough thing to go through with all the symptoms, so you should check with your doctor for a planned slow decrease of your dosage. But once you've detoxified, now the problem comes about what are you going to do long term. And I would tell people to get a copy of my book, Freedom from Addiction 3. It's a program in there that you can do at home without taking time off from work, and it has a high cure rate for all addictive behaviors. And you can Google iTunes podcast, Freedom from Addiction, Wynn Henderson, and take that link to my podcast. It's free. And learn all about the treatment program and about patients and various different types of problems and issues with addiction. So,
yeah, because, you know, we're talking about, I was talking about the physical withdrawal, but obviously there's a lot of other things going on often in addiction in terms of how people cope and needing to build coping skills and needing to build support systems and all of those kinds of things. And then, you know, if they've got a pain problem, they still need to get to the root of the pain problem. And that's, you know, a lot of the things that you had mentioned earlier that I mentioned in my book, including, you know, nutritional, emotional, and physical interventions that can help with the causes of pain.
Well, one good thing about your book is that you talk about alternative methods for taking care of chronic pain. Would you like to hit some of the highlights?
Sure. So, you know, pain can start from two different sources. Pain can start from a physical injury, or it could start from just chronic emotional distress. As I said earlier, when people have a lot of childhood trauma, they're more likely to develop chronic pain, and that's because they're always hyper-aroused. They're always expecting something bad to happen because that's been their early experience. So, you know, you want to look at what your history is, and you want to address whether it was a physical injury or an emotional cause, and you want to address those from different directions, or maybe both. The other thing is that if someone's in chronic pain, they're in emotional distress, and there's usually been a lot of losses in terms of things that they had in their life, work, relationships, recreational activities that they've lost. So there's a lot of emotional stuff, even if the cause is physical. So, you know, from a physical perspective, things like physical therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, those can address some of the physical causes. There's also something that I learned about in my research that I'd never heard about before, which is called low-level laser therapy. And most people think of lasers as instruments that cut through tissue in surgery, but that's one end of the light spectrum. At the lower end of the light spectrum, there's near-red and red light that actually promotes tissue healing. So this is a treatment where a light is just shown on the skin, and it promotes tissue healing. It changes the permeability of cells so that you get more oxygen and nutrition and cellular energy, and the cells can release toxins more easily. And it's great for pain relief. It's great for inflammation. It's great for healing injury. So that's another strategy from the physical end. From the psychological end, things like cognitive behavioral therapy, where you learn to think differently, because a lot of times people are stuck in negative thoughts and worries, and that changes your physiology in ways that greatly increase your pain. There's also biofeedback, which is one of the things that I do in my practice and one of the things that really helped me get well. And what that is it teaches you how to use your mind to control your body. It uses electronic instruments that measure your physiology, things like muscle tension, heart rate, blood flow to your extremities, electrical activity to your brain, and you learn how to control the things that are associated with more pain. And you learn how to decrease pain by changing the way your brain works, changing your muscle tension, changing your blood flow, things like that. There's also trauma techniques that are really helpful. If someone has specific traumatic memories that are very troubling, or you can use these rapid trauma techniques like energy psychology techniques. One of them is called emotional freedom technique. Another one is EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And those things very rapidly help you get over your trauma and release all that negative emotional energy and tension that you've been holding in your body, sometimes for decades. And you can also use either of those techniques to focus directly on the pain itself, and it can ease pain. So there's also nutritional approaches, vitamin deficiencies like vitamin D deficiencies, magnesium deficiencies. Those things can create more pain. You want to clean up your diet of things like aspartame or NutraSweet. Gives many people fibromyalgia-like symptoms or multiple sclerosis-like symptoms. So there's so many different ways to tackle pain. And if you can isolate the source and address it, or just address many things at once that might be contributing, then you can become virtually pain-free.
Well, you're not going to remember everything that Cindy had to say, so get a copy of her book, The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments, so that you can go into each of these things in more detail. It's a well-researched book, and it's well worth the time that you would take to read it if you are a patient with chronic pain. Cindy, it's been wonderful having you on the show today. Anything else that you'd like to tell us before we quit?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention my website again, my alternative pain treatment directory, paintreatmentdirectory.com. And there's a lot of resources on there, a lot of articles with useful information written by me and some guest contributors. There's inspirational healing stories and providers and tools that you can get, products that you can get that can help with pain.
Well, once again, Cindy, thanks for your time, and we honor the work that you're doing, and just keep it up.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show.